You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 137. Today is Thursday, May 2nd, and we are talking buy lows. It is Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. And yeah, it's that time of year, Steve, where some of the shiny new toys that tend to be big ads for the season, often those happen in April, and May, for me, feels like it's a great time to kind of shift into either trade target season or looking at, in some instances, buying in on people who are even being released to the wire a little prematurely, things of that nature. So a great show today. We've got a fantastic spreadsheet that Steve Gisuelli, Mr. Spreadsheet over there, has put together for us, and we will break down whether or not we feel some of these guys are buy lows. So going a little bit deeper on a handful of names, but if you guys are joining us on the live stream, we've got some great visual charts that we're going to share. Steve, voice is a little raspy. It's been a long week. Baby was in the emergency room. All is good there. It sounds more scarier than it was. But all is right in the fantasy world because my teams are actually doing good this week. How's it going for you?
Yeah, it's good. My offense in most leagues has been abysmal, to put it nicely.
Cardinals, and I think, the Cardinals especially.
Yeah, the Cardinals. I've been texting you all week just complaining, not realizing that you're in the emergency room with the kids. Sorry to bother you with my Cardinals complaints, but just wanting to get rid of all of those players because I'm just sick of watching those hitters.
It's always welcome
on that team. Yeah. Just frustrate me. But yeah, it's May now, right? The whole Nick Pollock gonna be May meme that he loves so much. So people and just in general, like, there's nothing to lean back on, and oh, it's only 1 week, it's still April. Like, I feel like it's kind of, you know, it's not, there's nothing set in stone with it, and it's very, it's soft analysis as far as like what people are thinking. But once May happens, I feel like people hit the drop button a little bit easier, they get more frustrated. So there's a lot of things to keep in mind and action to sort of take when looking at players that have been struggling for 4 weeks, because while it is a full month into the season and it has been very frustrating, especially considering this offensive environment that we're in this year, and I'll get into that shortly, there definitely is some opportunities to buy low on these guys, whether you have to just sort of hold your nose and buy the track record, or ideally buy the track record with an underlying process that shows there should be better results, which is kind of how we married this. We're looking for buy lows by looking at rest of season projections and then the player processes that process stats. And ideally those two line up and you could find some interesting buy lows there.
Yeah. And I think the, we'll go through each player and at the end kind of, give our choice on it or our decision on if we think it's a buy low or not. But Steve, I do want to hear you talk about the process because, you know, every now and then when we're prepping the show, you start to go into spreadsheet mode, which I always admire. And it's like when you think you've hit a certain amount of criteria, you tend to add another filter onto it. And it kind of distills it into a nice group of variables to look at. So before we get into the names, and it's going to be a deeper dive on about six or seven names on tonight's show, give us the rundown on, I guess, pulling back the curtain, what you did to build out the spreadsheet, what the rationale was, because it's a little bit of the bleak surface stats right now versus projections of what's rest of season. So tell the listeners how we structured this before we get into the names.
Yeah, I feel like the guy in the Geico commercial when he makes fire, you know, I made a fire, I made a spreadsheet, like, you know, something like that. But that's essentially what I do for every show or whenever we have a process like this. But I'll share the actual Google Doc in the show notes, And it's nothing crazy. I'll bring it up here for people on the live stream. But essentially, what we're looking at and the process behind the process defined by Lowe's, if you will, is a sheet just of process stats. It's a custom leaderboard that I built on Fangraphs with things like walk percentage, strikeout rate, the underlyings behind that, O swing, Z swing, Z minus O swing, which I had to calculate myself, but that's easy, just subtracting the two. Contact percentage, swing, strike, and then some quality of contact as far as barrel rate, hard hit percentage, as well as like luck stats, which is BABIP, home run, the fly ball, and then like spray direction stats that like things like XBA might not care might or don't factor in. So when you look at a guy's XBA and it says, oh, he should be hitting 300 per XBA X batting average, but he's hitting 200 by low. No, those you need to factor in things like ground ball rate, fly ball rate, pull percentage, because XBA is agnostic of things like that. And obviously, you know, things like pulled fly balls perform much better. So we want to look at those things when looking at process stats as well. But then the overall driver of this spreadsheet is just WRC plus, the player's current WRC plus, and their BADX projected WRC plus for the rest of the season, and then a difference of the two. And then we're just sorting by the largest differences. So in theory, just by looking at projections, these are the guys that should improve the most. And honestly, if we just stop there and just use the two projections, this would still be a good episode and there would still be good buy lows on here.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just how it sort of works. Like there's a reason why these projections and these guys' track records say that they're going to be X percent better, you know, in the case of the first day that we're going to talk about, 69% better the rest of the year, and improve his WRC plus from 39 to 127 for the rest of the season. It's because they have a track record and because there's a lot that needs to go into it other than these first 4 weeks of the season. Nick Pollock brought up a quote that Chris Towers, your boy from CBS Sports and Fantasy Baseball Today, likes to quote, in that history didn't start 4 weeks ago, when just talking about early season statistics. So there's a reason why these guys are still projected to do things a lot better than what's going on, even if there is not a lot of encouraging signs under the hood. If you're looking on screen, you know, all of these process stats and underlying stats are sort of color-coded. Green is good, red is bad. So, like, you know, a quick way, if you're going to look at the sheet when I put it in the notes, like, you want to find guys with low WRC pluses or large differences between their projected and current WRC pluses that have a lot of green, that are doing things well. And, like, there's some guys on here, like Aaron Judge, like, you know, that we're not going to talk about because that's obvious. And like, he still has a good WRC plus. It's just projected for a lot higher. So that's sort of what went into it, how we built it. And again, I'll share those, that sheet for anyone that wants to look at it. It's nothing crazy. It's basically just pulled in data and a few,
conditional columns, formatting.
Yeah. Conditional formatting and subtraction formulas. But, that's the process, and I think we highlighted some good guys. And, you know, even just beyond that, right, like if you just look at projections, like that's what Trey Turner was last year, right? That's what Bo Bichette was the year before. Like there was no reason to buy into the process other than buy into the bounce back, other than to the fact that their track record said that these guys are going to be good, and you kind of had to just hold your nose. But I think to marry the projections with underlying process, which, you know, BADX takes into account how hard you're hitting the ball and things like that. So it's a bit, you know, it's a bit redundant, but it's also good to look at the process that goes into it rather than just blindly buying projections, which, you know, you can do too, and you probably won't be wrong.
Last year at this time, Juan Soto was hitting .217 and the ground ball rate was extremely high, so there was still stuff to point to. And even so,
great point.
You know, he finished out the season, you know, more than fine with a 325, I'm sorry, a 275 batting average and 35 homers. So, yeah, I think we got to look at the projections, look at the current stat, look at all of the underlying metrics, but then the narrative as well is what's interesting about this. And that leads us, I think, to our first guy, because Steve, like you said, you want to start with the WRC plus that's low
real,
right now.
Real quick, before we get into a player, and I know we got some guys here that we want to talk about, but I also just want to talk about offense in general.
Okay, yeah.
For this month, again on Fangraphs on the leaderboard page, on like the team leaderboards, you could look at splits on a split leaderboard, and you can group time frames by like year, or in this case what I did was by month. So I want, because I didn't want to compare just this year to full seasons in the past, I want to look month by month to compare April's to April's, and just see in general. But if you do have struggling players on your team, it's you're not alone as far as offensively, right? By month, I broke out a leaderboard since 2014. This last month was the fourth worst month for slugging percentage since 2014.
Wow.
The months behind it were August 2014, September, October 2014, and March, April 2022. So 2014 was like the year of the pitcher 2.0. It was unbelievable. The offense was just way down. After that, they started to change the balls to have more offense. 2022 was the year of the deadened ball, right? And April and May were it's a bad month. This, mm-hmm. The first month is historically bad for hitters. So the only month in the last 10 years that has been worse, or the only April in the last 10 years that have been worse than this current one for slugging percentage is April and March of 2022. It's the sixth worst by OPS and the fifth worst by home run the fly ball. And the only March, April that was worse for home run the fly ball was 2014. So this just makes me think that the ball is deadened even more. That hitters are just that far behind. It's been a historically bad, at least relative in recent years, it's a historically bad month for offense, even factoring in the fact that offense is bad in April and May.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know it's been just a weird weather year as well. I mean, you know,
that's true.
The wind has been crazy. It's been cooler in places where it's usually warmer. Mm-hmm. And there are some train wreck offenses as well. When you look at, you know, the White Sox, I mean, you certainly brought up the Cardinals, but the Rockies.
The Pirates have scored like 27 runs in the last 2 weeks or something like that.
Ice cold.
Yeah.
That's fascinating, though, and really good context that offense is down that low. I know, last show or two shows ago, we were looking at just the overall OPS of where it's at right now versus where it ended last season, and it was much lower than across the league. But this especially shows that, yeah, offense is rough so far. So I guess in context of this, Steve, that's pretty much saying even if the story doesn't look good, just from, you know, how baseball happens, have a little bit of patience that this is
a little more an anomaly than you would in the past too.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So subject number one, and I think it's one of the hotter debates here, is Randy Arozarena, who has the biggest gap between his current WRC plus, and which, by the way, is at a 39 WRC plus for Randy Arozarena, and his BatX rest of season WRC plus, which is 127. So that 87-point jump there is the largest of this entire spreadsheet. Largest in the league then, right, Steve? Because this just pulls everything.
Right. Among qualified hitters,
okay.
The largest gap between projected WRC plus and current WRC plus. And I use the BatX as far as rest of season WRC plus projections.
So from here, we go to the color code on the spreadsheet, which, like you said, you're looking for green because these are process numbers, whether it's plate discipline, it's batted ball. You want the green stuff, and a Rosarena does not have much of it at all. The BABIP especially is rough at a 178. That's dark red. It's terrible. And on one hand, you look at that BABIP and you say, oh, well, the regression's going to turn around. You know, he hits the ball hard. He's got speed to him. I don't even have it in front of me, and I'd imagine he's a career 305, 310 BABIP.
322 career.
322. So he usually runs a high BABIP. But the problem with the Rosarena, in my opinion, is this narrative is kind of scaring me a little bit, Steve, along with the surface numbers, which we should mention. He's hitting 139 right now with a 455 OPS. He does have three homers and four steals. You know you're going to get a little bit of power speed. But a Rosarena put on quite a bit of muscle in the offseason. And actually leaving work today, I heard on Peoria Sports Radio, it's weird, they were talking about a Rosarena because they're laughing about the Cardinals. And they're like, oh, well, if Jordan Walker leaves the Cardinals, he's just going to turn into the next Adelis Garcia or a Rosarena. And they're like, yeah, well, the problem with the Rosarena, he bulked up with all this muscle and it's killed his bat speed. And I was like, hey, I'll be talking about that on the podcast tonight. So I looked it up. You know, there's some reports of this. It was hard to find anything that was too detailed. But what I will say that kind of supports that narrative is for the first time ever, a Rosarena is struggling mightily against fastballs. If you remember in his crazy breakout season, I think it was a shortened year and the Rays got all the way to the World Series. Kind of my knock on that breakout case for a Rosarena is that he did all the damage against fastballs. Since then, he's kind of evolved his game a little bit, but this year, I mean, he has just tanked where his performance against fastballs has been below the Mendoza line. I think it's under 100. I could pull it up, but struggling that bad and his K percent has followed. So this year he's striking out 29% of the time, which is as high as it's been in three seasons. And yeah, that like the fastball, like I was saying, this year he's hitting 0.67 against fastballs with a 44% strikeout rate. So that's to me what is daunting. The hard hit rate is down. The pop-up rate for balls in play is at 19%. So throw all that in with this kind of narrative of he bulked up and it slowed his bat speed. Rosarena was a late bloomer as well. So age, coming up on age 30. So, I mean, he shouldn't be like past it or anything, but everything looks terrible, Steve. So I guess the question is, how are you holding on to hope here? Is it just the back of the baseball card? And do you personally feel like this is a buy low?
I do, mainly because you just have to hold your nose and buy the back of the baseball card and know that Randy Rosarena is a streaky player. You do have three homers and four steals, which is, you know, not the worst thing in the world as far as from a fantasy perspective to have, you know, seven combined homers and steals in a month. You obviously want more than that, and I think there'll be better months. But it's an interesting note of what you said with the bat speed. We don't have it yet, but StatCast is tracking player bat speed. It's not publicly available yet, but I would imagine sometime soon, at least sometime this year, we're going to have that bat speed track data. Nice. And that'll be interesting to compare, you know, what a Rosarena's bat speed is this year compared to years in the past. I'm not sure if we're going to have past years, but at least we'll be able to see it relative to the league. Mm-hmm. But another thing I like to look at, and I'll bring up a chart here for those watching on the live stream, is something that Scott Chu mentions a lot. Pitcherless Scott Chu over at Hacks and Jacks does the hitter list every week, and he loves his rolling graphs, and because of that, I love rolling graphs. And something that what he talks about with hitters, and he talked about it this week with some struggling hitters on Hacks and Jacks, with Sarah Sanchez this week on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Look at me plugging everything like a good Pitcherless employee. Is when looking at rolling charts, and just a quick way to look at players going through slumps is, has this player slumped like this before? And with the answer for Rosarena, currently, right now, he really hasn't. There's been some dips, at least since 2022, and some dips for an extended period of time, but nothing like this far below 200 WOBA. We're just looking at, if you're looking for those listening on the podcast, we're looking at Randy Rosarena's 15-game rolling WOBA. And yes, there's peaks and valleys. That's baseball, especially in April and early in May. You kind of forget that's kind of how this works. And there's ups and downs. Like, you know, if the cliche is, if there was a down in July, we wouldn't be talking about it. Mm-hmm. Like there was for Rosarena, you know, towards August of last year.
Yeah. In July last year, he hit 153. With a 482 OPS, two homers, three steals. So pretty bleak.
Surface numbers worse than this. You know, as far as weighted on base, I guess, you know, it hasn't been as bad, but it was pretty close last year. So, yeah, I'm kind of buying it just based on it can't stay this bad for someone with this kind of skill. Mm-hmm. And this kind of track record, even though Rosarena has been a streaky player throughout his career. And this does seem like it might be the worst valley of his career. But, hey, I still think that at the end of the year, he'll have a 2020 season. But maybe it's not the 789 OPS he had last year. That was good enough for a 126 WRC plus. But maybe it's more like a 740 or 750 for like a 110 WRC plus. But if you're going to chip in 20 homers and 20 steals, it's still definitely a buy low in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a buy low. I also think it's possible that what we see is a little bit more Jose Siri-ish from a Rosarena, where like I think a bad Rosarena, especially if he's off and he's trying to fix stuff in the middle of the season. Like, to me,
I don't know if the batting average floor is that low. Like Jose Siri is like 200, right? Like 220 in a good year. I think the batting average floor for Rosarena might be like 220.
220, which is what Siri hit.
Yeah, that's like Siri's ceiling, though, is what I'm saying.
No, Siri was 241, Steve, back in 2022. I hear you. I'm just saying that for a Rosarena coming off of basically a 3-4 year stretch where he was pretty much a plus in average.
Yeah, I don't think. Yes, that's fair. I don't think you can expect a plus in average. That's fair.
Yeah, and the K rate regressing and everything, and just the hard hit. The pop-up, like, I hate it that all this is happening in the first month with the narrative, where some of these other guys don't have that narrative attached to it. So make of it what you will, but that's a Rosarena. Moving down the board a little bit, the next one we got is Corey Seager, whose WRC plus is an 80, and his bad X rest of season WRC plus is 147. So he comes in ranked fifth on this spreadsheet here. We're skipping some names like Colt Keith, Nolan Jones, Emmanuel Valdez, but Corey Seager is one of note. And I think this is one, Steve, that just like looking at the baseball side of this, coming off of a sports hernia surgery, missed spring. If you remember, there was a little bit of like draft day price suppression a little bit. And so Seager's really trying to find the groove. There's an interview with Boshi where he was saying that he doesn't know that Seager's fully 100% yet, and that he might just not be saying it, but he's still working through it a little bit. All that to be said, he's hitting 234 with a 625 OPS, so it's better than what we're looking at for a Rosarena, and it's Corey Seager. So this one, to me, barring, you know, the injury is still there, which I think he's recovering. But his projections rest of the season, like, I'm buying all around. So I think Seager, yes, some of the numbers are down a little bit process-wise, like the barrel rate's down, but it's still at 9%. So, and do you see anything that's very concerning, or do you think this is a definite buy low for Seager?
I think it's a definite buy, and I think it's a matter of him just working back to get healthy. There was a time where it was kind of assumed that Seager might not be back until around, like, right now. Like, it was kind of assumed that he was going to miss, like, 2 to 3 weeks to start the season. And then as we got to the last week of spring training, Seager played in, like, a minor league game, then played in an exhibition game, and then, great, was ready to start. Sure, he might be healthy enough to stay, but he's clearly not healthy enough to be Corey Seager, at least yet. Mm-hmm. But I think he's slowly getting there. If you look at the chart that I just put up, it's Corey Seager's 15-game rolling average of hard hit and WOBA. The hard hit percentage is like on a nice trajectory up. The WOBA just hasn't caught up yet, so I think it's a matter of him getting healthy, and he's currently unlucky. And, you know, we'll start to see the Corey Seager that we know from the last year and a half. Remember how slow he started in 2022, too? Like, he was amazing in that second half.
That's right.
But, like, if you look at his end-of-season line, it was just 245, 317, 445 for 722. And he did have 33 homers, but a lot of that came after a very, very slow start in 2022. So we have seen Seager turn it on. Maybe he was battling through something then. I'm sure he's battling through something now with this surgery that he's recovering from, the sports hernia surgery. So, yeah, I don't think that there's going to be many people selling low on Corey Seager, but yeah, he is clearly a buy low. And I think probably, like, at least by this process on our sheet, probably the most obvious one that isn't, like, an Aaron Judge or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, rest of the way, Bad X has him at 289 average, 23 homers, and about 140 runs in RBIs. So, yeah, that's a 147 WRC plus, and it hasn't even looked that bad so far for Seager. But, yeah, we know that he's a first, second-round fantasy star. So, yeah, that's a buy-low target there for Seager. We have, after this, another buy-low, a couple infielders. But first, we got to take our first ad break, and we'll be right back. Steve, a little bit more analysis probably needed for Alex Bregman, who he never is one that jumps off on the StatCast pages. So far this season, he's been a slow starter, along with the very uncharacteristic slow start for the Astros as a ball club. Bregman, as part of that, hitting 216 with a 577 OPS. Like I said, the StatCast stuff has never really stood out that much for Bregman, other than, I mean, the plate discipline is great, but some of the batted ball stuff, he's a guy who always takes advantage of the Crawford boxes with the pull power, so it's just going to look a little bit different. That said, what we're seeing under the hood for him so far this season, the plate discipline looks very similar. The max EV is in line with pretty much any other year for Bregman. And, yeah, I mean, some of the batted ball stuff doesn't look great, of course, because he's hitting 216. But for a guy like Bregman, who, again, is pretty much in the prime of his career, can we count on him to be that steady Eddie 20-homer, 260, 270 with great runs and RBIs the rest of the way? Because if so, he's definitely a buy-low candidate. But let's discuss, because there are some concerns under the hood, which, I mean, namely, like I pointed out in here, the pop-up rate, again, poor contact rate on pitcherless page, which is basically, are they topping the ball? Are they getting under the ball? Or is it weak contact? His poor contact is at an all-time high. And he traded out 9% of his line drives for his ground balls so far this season. I know it's just 1 month, but Bregman's kind of a line drive specialist. And if he's not doing that, it's a little concerning, because that's such a big part of his game. He did have his first homer of the season last night, and it was the second hardest hit ball he's had. So there's some bad and there's some good. Where are you falling with Mr. Alex Bregman?
I think Alex Bregman might be my favorite buy low on this list that is actually a buy low.
Okay, because people could be ready to move on.
Yeah, I think this sort of happened the last 2 years, honestly, right? He started off slow, has somehow managed to get to the 23, 25 homers with a 260 average, 800 OPS, you know, and good runs and RBIs. I don't know if the Astros are going to be good this year, but I think their offense is going to be good this year. And, you know, process-wise, Bregman's making contact. He's not striking out. He's not chasing pitches. He's swinging pitches inside the zone. Sure, yeah, the barrel rate at just 2% stands out. But I also think that the hard hit rate isn't too far off. It's at 34%, where he's like a career 37% guy. As much as the pull rate and fly balls and infield fly balls and line drive rate are concerning, and I do have them in this sheet, and I think they are important to look at, they are noisy. Like the difference between a line drive and a ground ball is like millimeters on your bat, right? Like that could change quickly and is noisy month to month. Like a month with a bunch of line drives, Bregman's going to hit 320. A month with a bunch of ground balls, Bregman's going to hit 212 like he is right now. So I think that Bregman, based on his track record, based on the fact that his plate skills are still good, is very clearly a buy, and is going to, you know, pop 20 homers into the Crawford boxes like he normally does.
Yeah, and that's where the Bad X has him, is rest of the way, 17 homers, a 257 average. So again, I think that's probably right about league average without having it in front of me. But it's the runs and RBIs with the Astros. They really got to get going, because I think that's where in 5x5 you're gaining ground is, you know, on
his you live with Bregman's
line,
262,
right? Yep.
363, 441, you know, even though it was, you know, quote, just an 800 OPS, you live with that because it was 103 runs with 98 RBIs. Exactly. He's only got 15 runs
collective
and RBIs
right.
This month. So
yeah. Runs, 10 RBIs. Yeah. So that said, I think is anyone counting the Astros out or writing off their offense?
Dude, I think a lot of people are, man. At least maybe because of the pitching. I think their offense is going to be good enough. And you know, their record is very, very concerning. I know Paul Spohr was talking about it on the Fireside Chat with Nick. Just how, you know, it's hard for any team to dig themselves out of a 9-19 hole like they were before yesterday. They're 10-19 now. Or I think that was Tuesday. They won yesterday. Currently are tied today. So even with that, I'm sure the statistics do not back up any team starting 9-19. I think the Astros are going to get a wild card spot. And I would take those odds, whatever they are right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's Altuve, Bregman, Alvarez, Tucker. You know, they just called up Lopez.
Yeah. The pitching is the concern. Right?
Oh yeah. 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 For sure. I'm just saying in terms of like, if we're bound or if we're betting
yeah,
on
we're
the
worried
counting
about the
stats,
counting
like
stats.
That.
Yeah.
I think
don't,
that's going
to
come.
You
around.
Know, they just sent down Abreu to their spring training facility in West Palm Beach. Loperfido's up. You know, I know that they potentially just lost McCormick to the IL. I don't know if he was officially put on that now, but their offense is good enough is the point. And yeah. I think Bregman will be a big reason why that offense is good. He's in a contract year too, I think.
So Steve, relatively speaking, cause they went in different areas of the draft, you're saying you would prioritize the Bregman buy low versus like an Arozarena. I think Seager we can put in a separate category because people would be reluctant to even move on from him.
Yes, I would target Bregman before Arozarena, correct.
Okay, yeah, I think I like that too. Well, let's get to another one that is perplexing and a little concerning. It's Bo Bichette. And Bichette is a guy who has been talked about in this type of... you know, just a little bit of question, a little bit of skepticism on if he is the player we thought he was. And we've talked about him a couple times in the past 2 years, even. And here we are, 1 month in, he's batting .213. The plate discipline looks solid, which is what you'd expect for him. Just one homer, three steals. I think all things considered, the three steals isn't the worst pace, given that last year he only stole five. So you'll take the three, but the .213 average, and at least on the pitcherless page, his X average is at a .211, which is dreadful. And the Blue Jays offense has been dreadful as well, like altogether. I know George Springer is struggling. Vlad hasn't been himself, even though it's been better than this. And it's looked really rough for Bo Bichette. Even in the past seven games, he's got five 0-for threes or 0-for fours. He's gone hitless in five of his last seven games. So the poor contact that we kind of mentioned that's on pitcherless with that above or topped getting under it or weak, that league average is like 60. And some of the names we've thrown out so far have been at like 63, 64%. Bichette is at a 70% poor contact. So looking pretty lost up there. Digging it like under the hood a little bit. The only thing I found, Steve, is that he's been much less aggressive on first pitch like approach, which is something we talked about for a guy like Brendan Donovan. And sometimes people just kind of surrender that first pitch versus, you know, attacking and finding a pitch to hit. So there's a chart that shows, I don't know if we've got that pulled up somewhere, Steve, but there's a chart that shows that he has just dropped his first pitch swing rate quite a bit since like 2022 even, but that's down as well this season, and his batting averages as well because of it. So for Bichette, it's tough to find the silver lining, and it's tough to even peg down exactly what that back of the baseball card is supposed to look like, because he's not as consistent as an Alex Bregman, for instance. So curious your thoughts on this one, because I think the manager would be ready to move on potentially if you're going for like 70 cents on the dollar for Bregman, or for Bichette.
Yeah, I like Bichette as a buy low. The bad X rest of the season has him at .284, .328, .432 for .119 WRC plus with just 14 homers and 13 steals. I would take the over on homers. I would be shocked if Bichette doesn't get the 20 homers. I mean, he did last year. He got the 24 in that dreadful start of the season where he essentially salvaged his year with that unbelievable September. I think he rostered Bichette that year and was just, and you held on to him. So, like, you remember that fondly, I think.
Oh, yeah. Like 10 homers in 1 month
or
something.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just crazy what he did to, save his season like that. There was a stat, a tweet today by Chris Black, at Down to Black. He's a great Blue Jays analyst. On Twitter, if you want to follow him, it's at Down to Black. And he just talked about how, regarding the Blue Jays' slow start offensively, that no team has faced more top 10 or top 5 starting pitchers this season. And then our boy, Thomas Nestico, TJ Stats, followed that up with actual metrics. And according to his Stuff Plus model, the Blue Jays have faced the second hardest pitching according to TJ Stuff Plus. So he wouldn't pin the offensive struggles mostly on that, but it basically essentially backs up what Chris was saying, and that the Blue Jays have faced tough starting pitching. And just combine that with the offensive environment in general for April, you know, some of these guys that have been slow starters before. And I think that a combination of all of that could lead to better days ahead for all of those in the Blue Jays offense.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I agree, Steve. I think it's a nice exercise to look at kind of who you would be willing to kind of deal. And I know it's tougher when you talk about like challenge trades, like that's where we generally speaking, you're trying to deal in a way that helps both teams. So it's a little bit harder to do like position by position, but just looking at like projecting rest of season, let me bring up some scenarios, even if not for trades, but for example, like an Anthony Volpe, who's been off to a really nice start. He's got seven steals, hitting .271. Would you do a Volpe, or theoretically, do you think Volpe will finish better than Bichette by end of year?
I'll still take Bichette.
You will? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's an interesting range, though. There's another name in here that I don't want to spoil because we're getting there, but a guy you kind of like throughout the whole offseason, CJ Abrams, has been great with hitting .295 on the season, seven homers, seven steals. You think Abrams has eclipsed Bichette?
Yeah, that's one that I'm going to disagree with the projections on. I'll go with Abrams. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Nice.
I just think that Abrams is sort of putting together, like, and that's something that the projections aren't going to capture, which is why, you know, there needs to be more than even just looking at the process stats, like, right? Like, Abrams has clearly figured out something offensively. He's pulling the ball. He's pulling all his fly balls. Like, he's tapped into his power. Mm-hmm. That's something that the projections are going to be behind until there's, like, more full seasons of data backing that up. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, by projections, yeah, you're going to take Bichette. And honestly, I think it'll be a lot closer than it is. Like, Bichette is going to be, you know, drafted as a top seven shortstop next year. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that he'll get there, despite how bad, you know, some of the contacts rate looks and how icy the Statcast page is and how miserable the Blue Jays offense has been thus far. I just think that he'll get there and be a valuable fantasy asset, and I think is a great buy low.
Yeah, I agree. And it was, like you said, Steve, April of 2022, Bichette had a .213 average, two homers, three steals, a .535 OPS.
So the same exact.
Very, very similar to where he's at. And he finished that season, despite that rough start, with a .290 average, 24 homers, 13 steals. So, and that was the year that he got caught stealing eight times. So he looks like he's running more and more successfully so far. So if the power can follow up, I think it is definitely fair to say you can still count on like an end of season line for Bichette that's like .280, 15 to 20, and maybe some more. And then the steals, I think, should be a pleasant surprise this year, where he'll probably, I mean, I would guess, because he had five last year, 13 the year before, but got caught so many times, I would guess this is the most we've seen since 2021 when he grabbed 25 steals. So just a little bit.
I think a .280 2020 season isn't far out of expectations, which is a really good fantasy season.
I agree. Yeah, just 26 years old. So it's not it's still all there for Bichette. They just got to click things in place there.
Should be like his power prime, right?
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of power, the next name before we take our second ad break, Spencer Torkelson, who we thought was surefire pop, Steve. The 31 homers last year, despite some average woes, he was definitely a WAF favorite. At the end of last season, when we were saying it looks like he's putting it all together. That said, the track record is small. And when you look at what he did last season, it was really just 2 months where he had nine home runs in August. He had seven home runs in September. But every other month of the season, he had a sub-800 OPS. So here we are looking at Spencer Torkelson so far this season, a .219 average, which is low, but you wouldn't be shocked by that for 1 month. What's shocking is the .589 OPS and zero homers so far for Torkelson. What do we make of this? A 2.4% barrel rate is not what you signed up for, grabbing Spencer Torkelson around pick 110. Do we think there's a buy low here, or is this one different than the others because it's such a limited track record?
How to erase all of the off-season hype in 1 month by Spencer Torkelson. Like, there was always so much love about Tork. Like, it was the first overall pick. He hit the ball super hard. Like, he barreled the ball. He slowly improved, like, his ground ball rate, started to hit the ball and chase less throughout his career. Like, there were so many different things that he steadily improved, and it just looked like an upward trajectory for Torque until you got to April 2024. And I think because it's just that 1 month that you could write it off, despite how, like, his Savant page right now is the opposite of what, like, you know, the prime Soto and Vladdy and Statcast pages are, where they're bright red. It's just dark blue in, like, all the places that you want it to be bright red. And what was bright red for him before is that's what's crazy, right? Like, unless he's hurt, sure, it's a tough park to play in, and there'd be a few homers if he didn't play in Detroit. But there is just nothing as far as process-wise, other than, like, the plate skills, which are, like, okay, but not even great. You know, he was better at not chasing last year and taking a walk last year, too. But there is nothing as far as quality of contact that makes you believe that there is a better hitter in here. But, hey, the Bad X has him as for a WRC plus of 119 the rest of the way versus his 72 this year. And with how hard and how well he's hit the ball, every other time other than these last 4 weeks, it makes me believe it. And I'll buy, you know, a 250, 20, 25 homer projection the rest of the way that most of the projections are giving him for Torkelson. So, you know, I think we may have to adjust our expectations down. Like, it's not like the breakout first baseman that we were absolutely hoping for, but I still think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, the poor contact that I was citing earlier, Torkelson is the highest of anyone we've talked about tonight with a 75% poor contact, which, it ain't great.
He's not hitting the ball well.
But it's just been a month, so I guess you can throw it out. I also think this is one that, unlike the rest, you might have a choice here with potentially waiver wire.
He's going to be dropped.
That's fair.
He's going to be dropped. Yes.
Excuse me. So 75% rostered in Yahoo League. So already available. That's dropping fast. And I guess if you're going to hold on to something, it's the fact that he went 2-for-8 in the doubleheader yesterday against the Cardinals, and 1-for-3 today. So at least he's, you know, 3-for-11 is at least getting some hits on the board. So you got to really squint and not be picky, but. Fourth worst quality contact in the majors so far this season.
Who are the three behind him?
I need to find that. I can look that up.
I thought you were looking at the leaderboard, but
no, I bet it's not a lot of names that you picked in the top 120 though. If I had to guess, well, we got more names ahead, guys. But we're gonna take our second ad break and we'll be right back. Okay, so Steve. Gleyber Torres is one that I think a lot of people were kind of viewing as not a sleeper, but a nice draft day bargain.
He was a favorite. He was a draft day favorite. Yeah,
he was. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, that's, you know, he quietly, because I think the industry's had a weird path on Torres, right? There was the rabbit ball year where he had 38 homers, and we all thought that, you know, this could be a fantasy all-star, like first rounder. And then once he wasn't that for a couple of years, we kind of moved off of him. And now that you look at the 2022 and 2023, when, you know, you talk about like a Bo Bichette, like 24 homers, 10 steals, 25 homers, 13 steals, like that's a great power speed combo. And last year he started putting the average together with a 273, which was almost a career high, except for the 2019 season. And now here he is off to a very cold start, hitting 215 with a 537 OPS, no homers. He does have three steals. What to make of Gleyber Torres? He's in that power prime, age 27. Are you all in on the buy low here for Gleyber?
Yeah, I like Gleyber a lot. I think he's another one of these streaky hitters. Have another rolling chart here up for Gleyber Torres if you're watching on the live stream. he has gotten this cold before. He's gone colder before. This is just who he is as a hitter. You know, last year it seemed like there was a little less. There were peaks and valleys, but they were smaller each direction. In 2022, there was a really high high, a really low low, kind of bookend around both ends of that. But this is just kind of who he is as a hitter. And I think that Torres' track record, despite, you know, only having two barrels on the year, a little bit higher of a K rate, something that we were excited about and why he was that fantasy darling is because, you know, hey, he paired that, you know, mid-20s power with a 14% strikeout rate, 15% strikeout rate, and that's back up again. But the swing strike rate isn't up too much. The contact rate is down a little bit, but he's chasing less, swinging more in the zone, so making better swing decisions just overall. I think Torres will be fine, and it may not be the 25 homers. It may be closer to 20. That's just kind of the case when you put up a goose egg on a month, unless he has like a 10-homer month or something like that, which is possible for Torres. Mm-hmm. He does have, you know, that sort of hot streaks ability in him. But, yeah, I buy the rest of the season projections of 18 homers, 11 steals, 260. Like, that sounds about right to me.
It's really similar to Alex Bregman, except you're trading off a little bit of runs plus RBIs for Bregman for the 11 steals for Torres. Yep. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference? You know,
positionally, it's, I think they're both great buy low candidates. Ones. Yeah. Probably two of my favorites on my two favorites on this list, just because Seager, you know, the price is too high and shouldn't be. Same with Bichette too. Like I don't know if people are moving on from Seager or Bichette. Yeah. Rosarena, we probably poke the most holes in.
He was drafted pretty high too. You know, or Rosarena was. Yeah, so I think there might be a reluctance.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. That's also a good point too. Like Bregman and Torres were probably drafted a little too early to get dropped, but not early enough to be considered in a trade.
Yes, I totally agree. I think those two are in the prime and this early, because some people might say, oh, yeah, well, eventually I would trade, you know, Bichette, but not till, you know, I want to give him May. I want to give him till Memorial Day.
You want to give him
like
Memorial
that.
Day. A lot of the stars you give till Memorial Day. Absolutely. The borderline guys, you get more frustrated, you probably give till May.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. I think this next guy that we're wrapping up with here fits into that same category. So very actionable. And it's Xander Bogaerts, who, Steve, I know we've got some shares of. We also liked him coming into the season, and so far not good, despite what I think was a pretty good Soul series, or the abbreviated series. He's really cooled off a .217 average, two homers, two steals. Xander Bogaerts, similar to Bichette. We're, you know, it seems like every year we look at Xander and try to make sense of, you know, what amount of power, speed, or average we're going to get from him. But one thing we were banking on coming into this year is that he should be a .285, .290 type of hitter, and .217 is putting him in a big hole to start. What are you seeing under the hood, and how's he kind of size up compared to the rest of these guys we're talking about?
I think he's a Bo Bichette light. And I think that he, you know, he hasn't hit lower than the .285 since 2017.
That's crazy.
For Xander. So just based on that track record alone, I have to think he's going to finish close to the .270 that the Bad X is projecting the rest of the way. You know, I think maybe it might not be the 20 homers or 19 homers we saw last year. Maybe it is the 15 that we had in 2022, but it was still an .833 OPS. And I think he's going to get there. Yeah. The hard hit rates look tough. The max EV is 3 miles an hour less than he's hit a ball last year. The plate skills are in line. He's not chasing, swinging a lot less in the zone, making more contact overall. That's just telling me like his timing is off. Maybe he's still also, I guess, potentially recovering from. I think he had off-season wrist surgery. Like, he finally cleaned up that wrist. Like, Bogaerts in the past has always started off like, well, the power has been good, then the wrist starts to hurt and the power sort of dies away, and like, he has 15 homers in July and finishes the season with 19 because the wrist bothering him for the last 2 months. That's seemingly like always the case. So maybe he's still like recovering. It's a little bit of a seeker type of thing. I know he didn't miss any time in spring training or anything like that. Was in the Seoul series. So, but still, maybe he's finding his swing and recovering through that injury. But this is more of sort of a hold your nose and trust Sanders back of the baseball card. But I still think it's a good buy low. I mean, he is projected for a 47-point WRC plus improvement between his current WRC plus and his rest of the season WRC plus.
Yeah, what's interesting about Xander, kind of like we were saying with Bregman, you know, his Statcast numbers have never really jumped off the page. He's just been one of those that Chris Bryant's another one that, like, even in their successful years, it doesn't look like it does for, you know, the Vlad and the Bryce Harper and everything. So for Xander, when you look at last year versus this year, his XBA this year is actually 268 versus 255 last year. So some of this stuff already looks like his barrel rate is in line with where it was last year, and he was a 19 home run guy last year. So nothing with the plate discipline looks like a cause for alarm or anything like that. Like, when it comes to what he's known for, which is that, you know, the chase rate, the whiff rate, just being a guy who consistently strikes
300.
Out.
Hits
300 and strikes out less than 20% of the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything looks the same. He's just not squaring the ball up quite as often as he has in the past, but it's been 1 month. The only thing that's unique about him compared to some of the others we've talked about is he's on the wrong side of 30. I don't put that much stock into that this early.
He's played a lot of baseball,
Yeah, he's played a ton, and the max EV is, so far, it's lower than anything we've ever seen. And I think you were saying, Steve, that at this point in the season, most people reach their max EV or showcase it for what they will on the season. So maybe some of that hard hit power is moving back a little bit. But even if that's the case, it seems like that's going to come with the 275 batting average, right?
It should. It should. Yeah. I think a lot of these guys, it's so hard. Like, you look at them right now, like, you look at Xander Bogaerts' line, it's like, how is this going to improve?
Be
like,
rescued.
Right. And then it is. And then it magically is.
The denominators are still pretty small, too. Like, it's like if you have one of those typical Bogaerts, like, four for five, you know?
And then 3 for 4 the next day, like, boom, you're back.
Yeah, so I'm actually curious right now. Let's just bust this out. So he's hitting 217 right now, and if he had a 4 for 5 game, that would go up to 238 right there. 217. Yeah.
You could swing your average 20 points in a night.
Still. In a single night, and he's the type of guy who can go on those types of sprees. So I think that's a good way to kind of round out, to just remind people that, you know, it's not a time to overreact for most of these guys. We would advise to give them till Memorial Day at least. But that presents a buying opportunity, and it doesn't mean you got to go out there and try to fleece the manager and you know, try to trade him like a Brenton Doyle for somebody like this. But at the same time,
Don't be slandering my guy Brenton Doyle.
He gave you a big 4 day stretch there, didn't he? Yeah. So I think these are good ones. So Steve, from the ones that are attainable, let me just call those Bregman, Torque, Torres, Bogaerts. How would you rank those in terms of, like, you know, where are you starting?
Bregman, Torque, Torres, and Bogaerts. I think I would go Bregman, Torres, Bogaerts, Torque.
I like that. I like that order. Yeah, and I think I agree with that. So there you go, man. That rounds us out. You got any final thoughts, Steve?
No, I think it was a fun show. It was a good process behind it, and hopefully we talked you into some guys that you kind of are sick of and are killing your team, and if you have them, it's reason to hold. If you're looking to shake things up, and potentially think outside the box rather than like trying to buy high on someone, maybe there's some targets here, because there should be better days ahead. Like a lot of these guys, it should be their worst month offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking at the rest of the spreadsheet, just since we got it, if anybody made it this far as well, some of the other names that are out there that I would say are like actionable, like Yandy Diaz has a lot of green, and he's on this chart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these are a little bit tougher where they're either not actionable or not attainable. But like you said, there's Judge, there's Julio Rodriguez, Yordan Alvarez, Matt Olson. But those ones are not going to be quite gettable. Castellanos is on here, yeah. Steve. But
yeah, I think I was considering putting him in as a name. Like, yeah, the O swing and the swing strike are brutal, but I mean, he bounced back from this last year, and I think, you know, maybe if you pencil him in for a 250 average rather than like the 270, even though he just hit his first home run, I think it was on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. A couple days ago.
You know, he still should get to 25. So that's 25 homers in 4 months of a season, not five, right? Or five, not six, however long this season mm-hmm. is. Yeah, I think Colt Keith is an interesting name. Like a lot of these guys with these bright red BABIPs, like they're gonna get better. Christian Acosta-Ron Strand, I think is a good name. There's a good zone swing. There's a good barrel rate. There's a good pull percentage there, and a low flat homer on the fly ball, low BABIP. Guys with like low line drive rates that are normally line drive hitters. Like Torkelson, like Bregman, you know, that those things fluctuate. When you're hot, you're just hitting a bunch of line drives. So, mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about, you know, Vlad's line is essentially bright red across, other than, you know, he's even starting to pull the ball more recently, and hit some more fly balls. There's a lot of guys here. Matt Olson, I think, is probably the best one here that isn't really attainable, but is off to a bit of a slow start, that I think is an extreme buy. If you can get any sort of discount on him or for any managers like looking to move on from Matt Olson, I think you should be all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, thank you guys for tuning in, and apologies, a little raspy over here. It's been a long week, rough
your
week.
Excuse, but your excuse.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's still riding that parenting excuse. Yeah. But yeah, we will be back again, housekeeping every Thursday. And on Wednesday nights, we're doing the live stream as well. You guys be sure to tune into that. We are always retweeting it as soon as the show starts from our Twitter, which is at WinsAbovePod. I am at Van_verified. Steve is at Stav8818. That rounds us out for episode 137. Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys.
Thanks, guys. Later.